Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson RV, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Welcome to Hour 2 of the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. That's Bob Buchanan, Matt Nelson running the board back there. I'm Tom Nelson, and I tell you what, it was early August. My phone rang. It was Martin Peters of Yamaha, and he says, Tom, I got a deal for you. Will you come up and fish the Kenai River Classic with us in Alaska? And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. I mean, I have always wanted to go fish the Kenai, you know. But August is absolutely, I mean, I'm down at Buoy 10. I'm in deepest, and in fact, it was the same weekend as not only Salmon for Soldiers, but also the Buoy 10 Classic. So, I mean, it was just killing me. I absolutely would, you know, that's not an offer that a lot of people would say no to, but the boat's down in Astoria. I've got a bunch of people that are absolutely going to kill me if I don't, if I bail out on that. But a lot of stuff goes on. So the Kenai River Sportsman Association runs the Ted Stevens Kenai Classic, and it's an opportunity for a lot of environmental concerns to kind of get together and talk about how to preserve what they have in the Kenai, which is an amazing body of water that has a reputation, and rightly so, of having some of the largest Chinook in the planet, right? And so, I definitely want to go. Now, at that time, it's mostly coho that are open to fish in August, and some red salmon as well. But I definitely wanted to get up there. We had Martin on just in, we had a phone issue, and he dropped right out. But one of the things that also happens this time of year is the boat builders, the IBEX, IBEX is the International Boat Buildings Exhibition down in Florida. And every year, a lot of manufacturers have their best gear and their newest stuff that is on display. And this year was no different. And Yamaha came up with a new drive system as well. So Martin's going to talk to us about that as well. So you got them there, Bubba? No, not yet. Okay. All right. Well, so anyway, Harmo is the new direction of Yamaha on their electric side. This is a drive system that runs on a 48 volt system that produces 225 pounds of thrust that basically amounts to a 9.9 outboard.
Yep.
And it'll move boats, up to 32 feet in a lot of different configurations. The whole drive will tilt completely out of water. It's super interesting, super quiet. And so you think about a typical drive system, and it's a prop that moves around a shaft. This is a rim drive, so it's a ring that's driven on the outside, and so there's the center of that is very, very small and can pass a lot of water right through it. So look for that too. Harmo is going to definitely change the way that your boat is going to run with regard to silent drives that are absolutely carbon neutral. Okay. No exhaust at all.
No nothing.
No nothing. Yeah. No nothing. And then the other thing going on, I think we're probably past our time frame getting him back. So make a long story short, you also need to kind of familiarize yourself with the Right Waters initiative that Yamaha has going on as well. Mm-hmm. And what that is the ability of this massive company to take all their plastics and their waste stream of their plastics and put them right back into the base materials and send them right back into the manufacturing process. And what that's going to do is it's going to reduce the amount of plastics that's hitting our oceans, because it's not just the plastics that we see, but it's the stuff in the middle of the ocean
that we don't see. There's a pile of it out there.
There is. There's like a raft of it out there. Yeah. And so that's something up, because at the current rate of uptake, our oceans are going to have like a half pound of plastic for every pound of fish within the next 20 years. That's a problem. Yeah. That's a big problem, because that's not plankton. That's plastic.
That's right. That's plastic. It's taking up a lot of space, and Forget the eyesore problem and everything. And who knows what problems it's going to bring down the road if we don't get that.
Well, yeah, and it's a fundamental disruption of the food chain.
And do our part. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to get up to the Nishgack every year, and on occasion you will see not necessarily a bottle or a can or a candy bar wrapper or something going down, but you will see people, you know, once every 2 hours a boat will go by upriver that's ferrying someone up. And there can be the tiniest speck of a piece of paper or a bottle or something, and that boat going 30 miles an hour upriver will stop and pick up that candy bar wrapper and take off again. I mean, there is just nothing up. You cannot tell mankind is there if there isn't, you know, a shed or something.
I hear you, man. That's cool. All right, coming up next, a critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report is brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
Winter recreational crabbing now open in Puget Sound. Several Puget Sound marine areas open for recreational crabbing beginning October 1st. The openings were approved by WDFW after summer catch assessments by WDFW indicated sufficient crab abundance available for harvest during the late season. Waters open to sport crabbing include Area 4, Nia Bay, Area 5, CQ, Area 6, Eastern Straits, Area 7, the San Juans, Skagit Bay, and 8-2 Port Gardner, Area 9, Admiralty Inlet, and a portion of Marine Area 12 north of Aoc Point. In each area, crabbing will be allowed 7 days a week through the end of the year. Sport crabbers are reminded that setting or pulling traps from a vessel is only allowed 1 hour before official sunrise through 1 hour after official sunset. WDFW crab managers also remind crabbers they have through this weekend to submit summer catch record cards before the reporting period closes for the season, and then it's going to cost you $10 each tag. Summer CRCs can also be submitted online or mailed to the address listed on the card.
Next round of razor clam digs approved for Washington Coast. WDF has given the go-ahead for the next round of razor clam digs on coastal beaches beginning Sunday, October 3rd. The announcement comes after the confirmation that marine toxin levels are within the allowable limits and razor clams from all open beaches are safe to eat. Many diggers found excellent success in the first opener in late September. Over the first 9 days of digging, an estimated 55,700 diggers harvested over 1 million clams, with many of those harvesting their limit. Tomorrow, October 3rd, the low tide is at 4:52 a.m. for the dig on Long Beach, Twin Harbors, and Copalis. On Monday, October 4th, it's 5:33 a.m. for the digs on Long Beach, Twin Harbors, and Mocrox.
Yamaha's Harmo electric outboard system makes U.S. debut. Yamaha introduced its Harmo electric system to the U.S. market during this week's International Boat Builders Exposition in Tampa, Florida. Yamaha Harmo couples a 48-volt power supply with a high-yield, low-drag, 3.7-kilowatt rim drive electric and specially encased impeller, which provides an incredible 225 pounds of static thrust, which is the equivalent of a conventional 9-9 gas power motor. Yamaha Harmo offers virtually silent operation, quick response, crisp and dynamic maneuvering, and easy-to-understand controls. Available in either single or twin configurations, the Harmo motor unit weighs 121 pounds, and the system can effectively maneuver boats up to 32 feet in most conditions.
The Elk Opportunity is the muzzleloader season that runs from October 2nd through the 8th. The easiest way to view the various hunting seasons in the state is to visit the hunting page on the WDFW website and click on the Summary of Hunting Seasons.
Statewide Trout Derby still underway, runs through the end of October. Outdoor field editor Mark Uoss has a great rundown of the Derby, which will find lakes that still have tagged trout in them on the Outdoor Line blog. Use the Find Local Lakes section on the WDFW site and search for lake near you to see if it's stocked with tagged trout for the Derby. Many lakes still have tagged trout in them, and with the weather cooling, the bite will start to heat up for these trout.
Congratulations to Brock Baker of Everett, whose 13.2-pound hatchery hooknose caught the first day of the event, proved to be good enough to take the $10,000 first prize. And Kyle Bond, great job winning the youth division with an 8.9-pounder. Over 1,800 anglers participated in the event. The grand prize Yamaha-powered 20-foot Kingfisher with a set of Raymarine electronics went to Tracy Lundberg.
Lundberg's lucky ticket was drawn from his entry in the 2020 Resurrection Derby.
Bow hunter shot by black powder hunter in tragic accident. An elk hunter from Pennsylvania faces charges of criminally negligent homicide after shooting a bow hunter in southwest Colorado. Authorities say the hunting partner of Ronald Morosco tried to call an elk in when Morosco allegedly thought he saw an elk and fired his muzzleloader instead of the animal. He shot, struck, and killed Gregory Gabish, a bow hunter who was not with him. According to the arrest warrant, Dolores County Sheriff Don Wilson said, basic hunting knowledge is to identify what your target is and beyond before shooting the gun. Mr. Morosco did fall below the standard of care by failing to properly identify his target, resulting in the shooting of a person. Morosco was taken into custody and is scheduled to appear in a Colorado court.
The Northwest Outdoor Report has been brought to you by Half Lion Brewing Company. Experience the rugged luxury of real beer at halflion.com.
That is an unbelievably tragic deal, man.
Boy,
it's
that
just,
was sad.
Well,
it's sad for everyone.
It is. Yeah. It just, you know, but it just goes to show you, I mean, no matter how many years you're in the field, hunter safety is absolutely should be the premium thought in your mind.
Yeah.
You never want to experience anything like that. And even on the boat, dude, if I've got somebody that's less than well, you know, I mean, you get folks out there that'll get squeamish or seasick or stuff like that. Well, now that person is more likely to become injured more seriously, and Murphy rides on stuff like that, dude. It's never just one thing. It's always what would get you in trouble in the woods or get you in trouble on the water is that stack up of things that you don't anticipate and puts you in a position that you don't have any experience in.
Yeah,
that's the problem, man. And so, in this situation in Colorado, most hunters are aware that if there's another hunter in a field, they're wearing hunter orange. In Colorado, bow hunters don't have to wear hunter orange, but muzzleloaders in some units do. So now you're thinking, okay, well, my buddy's wearing hunter orange. This guy, and then you got an archer that's in camo. You know, that's just an absolute tragic deal. Okay. Kevin John, you know, good friend of ours, one of my favorite people, dude. Just this guy, he is the tackle savant.
Oh, we draw so much from him.
Man, he came up to Sitka, and I've been fishing heavier top shots on my reels. Okay, so I'll spool up, you know, a reel with 65 braid, and then I've finally gotten to the point where I'm running 50-pound top shots on those. One of the reasons I do that is it sticks in my pinch releases, my offshore releases, like glue. And, I mean, you really got to try to get those things out. You know, you've caught a bunch of fish on that boat. So, but – when that's an efficiency thing, because there's so many downrigger releases that will give you false pops. Well, okay, well, great. You think your gear is fishing as it's coming to the surface, and you hook it up and go back down. So having gear that sticks in your – and I say this because he showed me a knot that locks – that is just absolutely smooth. You can't even hear it coming through your guides, and it's a FG knot with a Ricasso finish. It's So I'm not – but here's the deal. So at the end of my season, I take all my reels off, and some of them, you know, are going to go in for service. The rest of them are going back to him. He's going to spool them up and put top shots on them for me. I can't do it as well as he can. It's crazy.
Right.
But not a lot of people come on my boat and show me stuff like that.
Yeah, it's important. And I was having a difficult time, and I was using a reel that had come from an auction that was pre-spooled. And gosh, I still got my training reels with a downrigger. And
sure.
And every once in a while, I'm turning back, and my releases pop, and there's no – what's going on? Well, I had to put a thicker top shot in to hold it in there because the jellyfish were hitting the line and popping it out of the release.
Yep.
So there was no fish, and the jellyfish is gone because he flops off after it comes out.
But then the problem with jellyfish is that, especially if it's the red ones, the Puget Sound, you know, lion's mane jellyfish, that those nematocysts will get on your gear. Anyway, tell you what, we're going to jump out of here for a quick break. Our dear friend Kevin John Holiday Sparks giving us the view from the North End. Skagit Coho, upcoming waterfowl seasons, and some tackle tips and tricks from our friend Kevin John Holiday Sports right here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Weldcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Well, I love having this next guy in my wheelhouse. Kevin John Holiday Sports joining us this morning. Good morning, Kevin John.
Good morning, sir.
Kevin, how are you?
Oh, not too bad.
Good. A little busy on the Skagit.
Swingy things here.
A little busy on the Skagit these days, buddy.
Yeah, it's been pretty pretty bumping, that's for sure. You know, water's high and dirty here at this point, so it slowed things up a little bit this week, but sure looks in good shape on the top end. We got quite a few coho in the system already. So finish
the sentence for me. This is the best pink and coho season in the Skagit River since?
Oh, God, a long time. You know, I mean, since we've been in this shop, for sure. You know, so now we're looking, 12 years there. So, I mean, it's certainly among the best that I can remember. Lots and lots and lots of fish, cooperative water conditions were just amazing the entire pink season. You know, we never see that low of water for that long, giving you that much bank access for, you know, for guys down here on the lower river. It was just kind of a perfect storm of conditions. So, man, it was sure nice to be able to get out there and see people coming back with fish on a regular basis. Great way to get people broke into the sport and, you know, get the kids started and go play with that super lightweight rod that you only use on occasion.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's been, you know, it has been a great season. And, you know, I mean, obviously, your neck of the woods, there's a lot of anglers that are rightfully so upset over the lack of opportunity we got in Marine Area 7. You know, that was softened a little bit by the Bellingham Bay opportunity and the success of that fishery. That Bellingham Bay was pretty solid for a decent period of time as well for Chinook.
Yeah, when that thing opened up, I mean, those first couple of weeks were really solid. And then, you know, the last week or 10 days that it was open, you know, a lot of guys did really well. And then obviously we started seeing a better number of coho mixed in there as well. So, you know, that thing finished up strong. So that was nice for the guys that were set up, you know, had boats in the water and stuff to be able to get out and still use the things a little bit. You know, certainly a shame to not be able to run outside and, you know, target some of those big coho moving through. But, you know, at least we had a little bit of opportunity in that aspect.
So a couple news releases popped out in WFW this week that are definitely going to affect you. An extension on the Skagit River, an extension on the Cascade, and crabbing. We need to attack all of these. So let's start now that we've got this. We got a kind of a drying trend through this weekend. That creek should be dropping pretty good. I just saw the Skagit was like at 18.9 and on a pretty good drop. So give us some locations. Give us some tackle if you really want to do nothing but catch a bunch of big coho today in the Skagit River.
Yeah, so, you know, as far as the Skagit goes, once you get down to about 18, there's a lot of pretty fishable water. And obviously continuing to drop, fish are on the bite. You always want to be fishing them on the drop, not on a rise. And then with these cool nights we have, I mean, you know, walking in this morning, this is the first day I put a jacket on and I don't know how long. So, you know, the cool nights, things drop in real quick. I'd be surprised if we didn't have quite a bit more visibility tomorrow and Monday, Tuesday, we should be in really good shape. If I was going to be going right now this morning down low here, or up into Woolley, I'd certainly be fishing bait. You know, stick that behind a flash and spin, you know, on a plunkin rig and, you know, soak a sand shrimp or a big old gob of eggs. Coho really like eggs. Don't forget that. And they are plunkable, especially if you put them in a sack. And then, you know, I'd probably be running up river though myself. But, you know, if you get up above Rockport, above the Sauk there, that water's going to be gorgeous. The Cascade's really been putting out fish. Those guys have just been hammering on them up there, fishing, you know, eggs and shrimp under a float. You know, so I would probably gear myself that way a little bit if I was going to be a bank guy. And then if I was going to be taking a boat, you know, I'd have some, you know, number three, number four Vibrexes ready, and then a lot of twitching jigs on hand. You know, slap a chunk of shrimp tail or on the end of those things and go hit those holes and some of that slower froggy water up there above Rockport. And that thing should just be loaded with silvers at this point. After having this little bit higher water, one of the big benefits for a coho guy is that's going to flush out a lot of those older pinks. So you're not going to have all those extra fish to be, you know, snagging on or, you know, biting at it that are just kind of boots at this point. So, you know, you should be able to really target fresh cooperative fish at this point. So I would get above Rockport if I was going right now.
You're just about going to have to from a visibility standpoint.
Yeah. Till what, Tuesday, Wednesday, you think?
You know, I think it'll be quite a bit clearer tomorrow looking at, you know, the flow charts and the weather we're looking at. But I would expect Monday afternoon, Tuesday, you should be styling.
And so now we got our winter crab season just announced up in the San Juan. So where would you direct guys and what would you have them put their crab pots in if they want to get some crab out of the San Juans?
Well, you know, I mean, you can still fish all the normal areas you do. We typically just end up going up a little bit deeper. You know, so the guys that are fishing, you know, Padilla, you know, Hat Island, that type of stuff, that are used to fishing 60 foot of water, you know, slide out and fish 75 to 100 feet of water. You know, move a little further north and fish 125 feet of water. You know, we see a lot of guys go and fish West Beach, you know, off of Area 6, and early in the season, when it opens up in July, those guys are fishing, you know, 30 to 60 foot of water. And by the time we get through, you know, 1st of November, most of those guys are fishing, you know, between 100 and 150 feet. So a lot of those crab will move out into that colder, deeper water. And the great thing about the winter fishing is there's not near as many people out there. So your pots tend to, fish a little better. But those crab are big and hard and full at this point. You know, we really see very, very few soft shell crabs. And they are packed full of meat.
You're going to have to stop. You just made Bob drool all over his show sheet right there, dude.
It doesn't take much.
Dude, that is a fact, man. That is an absolute fact. I mentioned I got some halibut out there. He started drooling again. Okay. Kevin John, Holiday Sports, joining us this morning. HolidaySportsBurlington.com is a website. So you are a waterfowl nut to the point where you couldn't wait 2 weeks for the general opener. You just got back from the Alaskan Peninsula. Tell us about that particular drill.
Well, I went up there last year in late October since I drew an emperor goose tag, and we had a great time, and we were there, you know, just when a big push of those birds left, you know, like 5 days into our trip. And I knew it was dangerous going in the first place. I'd probably have to go back. So we did that again this year. I went with my brother and a buddy and his dad. But we went 6 weeks earlier this time. And so, you know, there's a huge number of brant, basically all of the brant that, you know, filter down the entire West Coast. They all congregate in the Eisenbeck Reserve up there. It's the largest eelgrass beds in the world. And there is a lot of that stuff, and those birds are everywhere. You know, it's also a two bird limit like we see down here. But you get to hunt them 7 days a week for the duration of their season. So in a week, I shot a limit of brant every single day, and I ate a whole lot of brant.
Dude.
Which I think is probably the best quality waterfowl out there, as far as I'm concerned.
There is absolutely no doubt they are roast beef on the wing, dude. They're amazing eating.
Flying roast beef.
Yeah, they're
awesome.
Yeah, they're crazy, and they eat nothing but eelgrass. They're an amazing critter, and you can hunt them down here on a limited basis. But you also got into some world class coho angling up there too.
Yeah, you know, most of those little creeks around there have coho, and there were a couple of them around when we had gone last year, but, you know, that was another thing, trying to go a little bit earlier. I didn't want to go too early and miss the birds, so we ended up going like the 15th of September, and, you know, those guys are all telling me that it wasn't really, like, hot fishing, but I probably caught 150 coho myself in the 6 days that I fished.
Size-wise, so, were there any big boys?
Yeah, you know, we had a couple of fish that were under 8 pounds, but the vast majority of them were like 8 to 12. Yeah. And then we probably had, you know, maybe close to a dozen of them that were probably in that 14 to 16 range.
Nice.
You know, I took a couple of 7.5 foot rods with me that would fit inside my gun case, and, you know, a couple of reels. Obviously, I can't run just super basic stuff, you know, so I brought a bunch of leaders and things, and then I was way over-geared for what I needed for a lot of it. You know, after I had the, you know, 30th fish of the day or something, I kind of switched over and I started messing around with spoons and hardware. And I tell you, man, you know, taking a third ounce or an and a quarter ounce little Cleo or a half ounce Steely, and being able to work some of that smaller water, you know, up through the column, down through the column, dead drift and that stuff, and, you know, pulling fish out of spots where somebody's been throwing eggs in them for 30 minutes and not getting a bump. You know, it's pretty cool to get to work it.
Yeah, I know.
You know, super windy up there, you know, so you have to use something a little bit dense. So it was kind of a fun game to have to know how to work your gear and pick the right thing so that it'll still get down, but it'll still go through the wind. It was a really cool trip.
I spent a couple summers working for the University of Washington Research Project in a place called Chignik on the Alaskan Peninsula. And Chignik, I found, was the Aleut word for wind. I learned about that. All right. So Kevin John, Holiday Sports, before we let you go, most of the birds that we're going to be able to hunt come 2 weeks in the waterfowl open are going to be locals. What do you think? What's your gut with regard to the success folks are going to have on the opener? What's our local duck populations look like? What's going to happen in a couple weeks?
Well, you know, I shot an awful lot of shells up there, so I did my best to push them south.
You had a boy.
And, you know, right when I got back, everybody started telling me how many birds have shown up. With that last front we had seen, we had a big mass of birds move in. Obviously we're going to have predominantly local birds, but we've also got quite a few snow geese have shown up on the south end of Padilla. There's quite a few more puddlers in there. We've also got a lot of specks hanging out right now. So here will be one of your, you know, limited opportunities to get your hand on a white front, which would be cool. Our numbers look pretty decent. You know, obviously we were drier here too, so we didn't have quite the production that, you know, we've been accustomed to see in the last few years. And that's going to kind of be what we're going to see across the board. It was the same thing up in the, you know, the Canadian, you know, wintering grounds and stuff. They didn't have phenomenal hatches, but they were still, you know, solid enough with birds being above a 10-year average, you know, coming out of last year. But I think we're going to be in pretty good shape. You know, anything that's got a little bit of water in it, you know, you can see a duck or two. There's a lot of birds around. There's a lot of feed around, man. There is a ton of corn planted this year. You know, I got to drive around a couple, 3 weeks ago, and I don't remember this much corn being planted in a long, long, long time. You know, and whether that's cow corn and, you know, canned stuff going to market. So those are both harvested a little differently. So there's going to be quite a bit of stubble and stuff left to be able to work. But there's a lot of prime habitat and the right stuff planted. We had, you know, a lot of grains and things here, especially on the south end of Padilla, and then going down kind of around the north end of Skagit Bay anyway. So I think we've got a, you know, a heck of a lot of feed here, and I think it's going to hold a lot of birds, you know, well into the season.
He's Kevin John, Holiday Sports. Check out his website, holidaysportsburlington.com. Of course, they share a parking lot with Skagit Arms and skagitarms.com. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. And I think on Tuesday I'm going to be rolling up there with a big old box of reels for you to top shot for me and get set up. So you're probably going to be sick of me in about 5 minutes, bud. So
thanks for sharing, Kevin.
All right, no doubt, buddy. Call in sick that day for sure. Kevin John, Holiday Sports. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Guys.
All right, man. You take care. Quick reminder, get your rifle sighted in. Log on to seattlerifle.org. Hunter sight-in dates today and tomorrow, 10 to 3, and then again on the 9th, the 10th, and the 13th. More information and the location, log on to seattlerifle.org. Coming up next, the hottest report we've heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed is RoyRobinsonRV.com's Really? Where? And it's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really? Where?
Just coming back. The island of Tinny and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
The ocean turned red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonRV.com's
Really?
Where? RoyRobinsonRV.com will take you anywhere. Really?
If you're in the market for an RV, you absolutely owe it to yourself to check out the all-new Roy Robinson RV Center, 15855 Smoky Point Boulevard. There, you're going to find Class A's, Class B's, Class C's, Super C's, travel trailers, fifth wheels, tow haulers, pop-ups, campers, boats, and others at Roy Robinson RV Center, RoyRobinsonRV.com. All right, what's the hottest thing you've heard of all week? Bob Buchanan, a BOMAC tackle.
Well, I've been so doggone busy chasing coho, but I'm awful excited for crab.
I am too.
The razor clamming is off the charts, so good, and that's firing up with another set of digs. And the one that's slipping in on us that a lot of folks haven't really given a lot of thought yet on is the squid jigging.
Yeah, I got to come down and do that with you, especially that boat end of that really intrigues me. Yeah. Do you use lights or do you go during the day?
No, I go just before dusk. Go in the afternoon, and I want to be in the recliner eating dinner by 6:30, 7 o'clock.
I like that. Yeah. I like the recliner program for sure. For me, it's kind of a hybrid. I am all up in getting a whole bunch of crab and eating fresh hot crab. It's just – you know, there's not a lot that's right. Better around this neck of the woods to eat, but also, you know, I got one eye on hunting season, and I'm gonna get out to the Seattle Rifle and Pistol Range this week. So and if you want to do that too, they got open hunter sight in. SeattleRifle.org is the website. You get out there. It's in Machias, really great range with a bunch of guys that are going to help you out and know what you're doing. So, again, getting ready for that. And, of course, Bailey the Black Lab and I went out and got our first pheasant of the season this year.
Nice.
And it's just not fall until you see your dog get all fired up. And there's nothing they love to do more.
No.
Then chase birds.
They live for it.
Yeah. So
we'll
probably be sneaking out and doing that in the morning as well. We got to catch up on some texts we got here. And then the new text line is 206-421-3776. That is a text toy powered by Yamaha Outboards. Hey guys, I'm fishing on the Snohomish and Skycomish. This is from the 206. First question, pinks are rolling and jumping, but not biting. What can I do to get them to bite? And then second, what should I use for coho from the bank? If you're not getting bit on those pinks, go smaller. Okay. Quite often guys are using big, fast moving spoons that are going to sink down through the water column. Your gear's not going to be available to them. So try a Dick Knight. Very, very small spoon on a longer leader and toss it through the jumpers, okay? That doesn't work. Go to a spinner. But generally, at first light, you're going to get them to go. And then I would definitely move to a twitching jig, a marabou jig. For some reason on the coast, twitching jigs kind of morphed into a squid or an artificial, hoochie around a Gamakatsu bullet head jig, okay? Here in the Puget Sound area, you need that marabou. You need that motion that feather jig is going to provide to you. And then if that doesn't work, go get some 18 count sand shrimp and tip one of those jigs with sand shrimp, and you will get bit. I just about guarantee it.
And try. I've noticed at times if I use a Dick Knight for them back there, and I'm fortunate where I'm at, I can see them out there, and they're just staged long before spawning. But I actually cast upstream and bring that Dick Knight down through them. The water's not real fast, but it's nevertheless it is the green in the backyard, and you reel that down through them. And once one breaks from the pack and starts following that Dick Knight, the others follow them. Before you know it, they are grabbing. You're not flossing them; they are grabbing. So sometimes try the reverse method. Instead of fishing across them, swinging through them, try going up and reeling right past their nose.
Yeah, great call. Great call. That is a great call. No question about it. From the 206, fish the Chehalis above Satsup, hatchery, coho retention only. Caught 8 fish all wilds. Probably saw 20 other fish caught. One hatchery fish caught with a salubritory holler by another boat. Why have selected fishery if the numbers are that high of wild fish and that low of hatchery fish? So obviously WDFW is trying to craft opportunity. And on years of anticipated low wild coho abundance, to craft any opportunity at all, it's got to be selective.
Yeah.
I agree that when you're hooking a bunch of wild fish and there is a mortality associated with hooking these wild fish, it's difficult to make that jibe and have that make any kind of sense at all. So, I get where you're coming from for sure. But, we got to get some opportunity
too. That's a tough one.
That is a tough one. From the 253, hey guys, I got a fish finder from a neighbor. I reset it to factory settings, trying to get things dialed in. Didn't realize I would have to select a transducer type. How do I figure out the power the transducer has? I don't see any markings on it. And from the research, there are 3 options. I don't know if I'll have the chance to, the quality of a picture or functionality of the device. Could you provide a little insight for me? Yeah, absolutely. So what I would do if I were you if you're getting this older fish finder from a neighbor, I would go to airmar.com and I would get a transducer for that sounder.
Yeah.
Because if the guy's getting rid of this fish finder, why is he getting rid of it? He's getting rid of that fish finder because it's not getting a good picture. Why is it not getting a good picture? Because the transducer's probably worn out. And I've said this over and over, but transducers, particularly transom-mount transducers, are a wear item on your boat. They're like tires on the trailer, okay? They wear out. They're a plastic matrix that's supposed to hold a crystal in a very specific place without any air and not any water. And after a while, you'll get water seeping into these things. But what happens time and time again is they'll get damaged. They'll get damaged either by rocks flying up from your trailer tires or something's going to hit it in the water column. You get a little bit of crack.
It's been backed into the beach a couple times.
Sure, whatever.
Sideways, and that transducer's bounced on the rocks or sand.
The best way I can tell you about this is look, you got a stereo, right? What do you listen to? You listen to the speakers, okay? Transducers are not just the speakers of your stereo, your underwater stereo, but they're also the ears. So what you're seeing on the display is that graphical interpretation of this underwater rock and roll show that's going on here, right? So if you don't have a good transducer, it may not be putting out the right frequency or strength that you need, and it may not be listening or able to hear as well as it should either. There's so much variability to having to do with a transducer. I would cut that amount of the variability out there. It's not that expensive. You don't need to spend a whole bunch of money on it because they got all kinds of transom-mount transducers. But just getting a new one will make your life simpler and cut out a lot of variables. So give that a try. Get a new deucer. You're probably going to have a better outcome. We got to go drop some crab here pretty soon, Bob.
Yep.
Got to happen.
Yep.
The winter crab are just absolutely, you know.
Got some more river coho, and I hate to tell you, Tom, but my backyard opens up for blackmouth in November.
Oh, my goodness. All right, well.
Area 11.
Area 11 and 13 stays open all year, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. There may be a sea beast migration down to your neck of the woods.
I don't have a heater, but just dress for it.
Yeah, I will. I tell you what.
My slip will hold your boat.
That's a good point.
No problem.
You get them jigging on the new Puget Pounder jigs? You ever get them jigging?
You can do it any way you want. There's multiple ways. And if the wind blows, you go hide behind an island.
I'm going to write a jigging blog this winter, and your Puget Pounder jigs, especially those smaller ones, are going to figure prominently. I have to admit, over the last few years, I've become a little too downrigger centric. And I got this year, we did more jigging and we did more mooching and we had more fun.
Yeah.
Dude, it's been so much fun having you in the studio.
It's great being here.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, and we'll see if we can't talk Robbo and Joey back in the studio. You missed any of the show, jump on MyNorthWest.com, get our iTunes podcast deal going, or log on to TheOutdoorLine.com. Give us a follow on social media at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For Matt Nelson behind the glass, for Bob Buchanan joining us from BOMAC Tackle, I'm Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN, Seattle.